translation, for this living entity, no one is dear, nor is anyone unfavorable. He makes no distinction between that which is his own and that which belongs to anyone else. He is one without a second. In other words, he is not affected by friends and enemies, well-wishers and mischief-mongers. He is only an observer, a witness of the different qualities of men. Purport as explained in the previous verse, the living entity has the same qualities as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he has them in minute quantities because he is a small particle, sukshma, whereas the Supreme Lord is all-pervading and great. For the Supreme Lord, there are no friends, enemies, or relatives, for he is completely free from all the disqualifications of ignorance that characterize the conditioned souls. On the other hand, he is extremely kind and favorable to his devotees, and he is not at all satisfied with persons who are envious of his devotees. As the Lord himself confirms in the Bhagavad Gita 9.29, Samo hamsa bhuteshu nami dveshasti na priya yeva janti tumam bhakya maiti teshu chapya hum. I envy no one nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all, but whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. The Supreme Lord has no enemy or friend, but is inclined towards the devotee who always engages in his devotional service. Similarly, elsewhere in the Gita 16.19, the Lord says, Tanaham dvishata kruran samsareshu naradaman shipam yajashram ashuban asurishveva yonishu. Those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest among men, are cast by me into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life. The Lord is extremely antagonistic toward those who are envious of his devotees. To protect his devotees, the Lord sometimes has to kill their enemies. For example, to protect Prahlad Maharaj, the Lord had to kill his enemy, Hiranyakashipu, although Hiranyakashipu attained salvation because of being killed by the Lord. Since the Lord is the witness of everyone's activities, he witnesses the actions of the enemies of his devotees, and he's inclined to punish them. In other cases, however, he simply witnesses what the living entities do and give the results of one's sinful or pious actions. Na hyasyasti priya kashchin na priyaspa paro piva ekasarva dhyam drashta kartrinam gunadoshayo. For this living entity, no one is dear, nor is anyone unfavorable. He makes no distinction between that which is his own and that which belongs to anyone else. He is one without a second. In other words, he is not affected by friends and enemies, well-wishers or mystic mongers. He is only an observer, a witness of the different qualities of men. So, in the prophet explaining the purport here, the position of the Lord in being equally disposed to everyone, because everyone is his son. So, he's the well-wisher of everyone. Suridam sarva bhutanam. But at the same time, as someone shows him special affection and love, the Lord reciprocates. Being a person, he reciprocates for others. As Prabhupada said, if you want to be friends with Krishna, Krishna will be friends with you. If you want to play tricks with you, with Krishna, Krishna will play tricks with you. So, he will reciprocate according to a person's dealings. So, a sadhu, or a Krishna conscious person, is also equipoised and equally disposed like the Lord because of his constant association with the Lord. So he starts to develop a similar kind of qualities and attitude. And in the third canto, the verses there, spoken by Kapila Dev, Titikshava Karunika Suridam Savadehina Majata Sakravasanta Sadhava Sadhavutani. This verse describes the qualities of the sadhu. He's tolerant, he's merciful, and he is the friend of all living beings. So it's the same kind of statement there. Suridam Savadehina. Suridam Savadehina. Suridam Savadehina. Means the same thing. Deha means body. Prabhupada said that the sadhu is the friend of those who are embodied, and he said not only human beings but all species of life, and he sees everyone as spirit soul, everyone's part and parcel of Krishna. So therefore he tries to help everyone.
just like Lord Chaitanya, when traveling through the forest of Jarikanda, he inspired the animals, wild animals, to dance and chant. Here I see you're also inspiring this cockatoo to chant. So, this is sadhu, he wants to uplift all. Haridas Thakur, he said that by loud chanting of the holy names, even the non-moving entities like trees and creepers, plants, they'll also be delivered. There's also a story of how Shivananda Sen, when going to Puri, he took one dog and he was looking after the dog, giving prasad. Once they had to cross the river and the boatman refused to take the dog, so Shivananda paid extra money. Then, on the way, the dog suddenly disappeared, and Shivananda thought that I hadn't looked after it properly, so he ran away. He was feeling sad and he was fasting. But when he got to Puri, he saw the dog was there, sitting by the side of Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya was throwing some prasad. And later that dog left his body and it came by Kunta. So the sadhus then, they're kind to the all living creatures. Of course, one shouldn't become overly attached to any of these creatures, as Bharat Maharaj did. He was very kind to the baby deer who lost his mother, and he became too much attached and to the bodily form of the deer, and as a result took birth as a deer in his next life. So he overstepped the mark somehow in his affection and dealings. But anyway, because of his being a great devotee, he was able to remember the activities of his previous life, and this caused him to take shelter of the ashram of great sages, even while he was in the body of the deer. And by tasting the prasadam, hearing the discourses spoken by them, he attained the body of Jarabhara in his next life. So the devotee is the well-wisher of all, but he shouldn't be overly friendly or attached to anybody. He should be kind-hearted. It's a jata-sattva vashantam. He has no enemies, and he's peaceful, and he always abides by the scriptures. All his characteristics are sublime. These are the ornaments. Bhushana means ornaments. Sadhu Bhushana, these are the ornaments or decorations of the devotee who is decorated with all the characteristics. But there are actually 26 qualities of the devotee, and there's one primary quality and the others are secondary qualities. So the primary quality, the primary characteristic, that is that he surrendered to Krishna. And as a result of being surrendered to Krishna, all the other qualities become developed and manifested in his character. But without surrendering to Krishna, then there's no hope of developing all these good qualities. Because one will be, if he's not surrendered to Krishna, then he'll be surrendered to Maya, the material energy. Because the constitutional position of the living entity is to render service. Service should be to Krishna, but if he's not serving Krishna, then he'll just render service to someone else, to his family members, his country, his own senses. He'll be a godas, servant of the senses, because he's serving by nature. The living entity, he reciprocates and has dealings with others. But the dealings in this world, they're all temporary and flickering. Whereas the dealings with the Supreme Personality of God, the relationship with the Supreme Personality of God, is not temporary, it is eternal. So everyone looking for some peace, stability in their life, if they try to depend on the temporary situations and temporary relations in this world, then there will always be some shifting of their situation, instability. Deha Patra Kalatradishu. Srimad Bhagavatam, they said that persons who are devoid of spiritual knowledge, they are too much attached to the fallible soldiers, like the body, wife, children, society, etc. Although sufficiently experienced, still they do not see their inevitable destruction. So the soldiers should give protection. That's the duty of the soldiers. Fallible soldiers can easily be killed and defeated, but they cannot give us real protection. So these things, the body, the family members, they're all fallible. They can be destroyed at any time. So they cannot give us real protection. They cannot protect us from death. So therefore, it's not actually wise to take shelter of them, reposing all one's faith in them. Because ultimately one will be disappointed and he will feel grief and lamentation when he loses his near and dear ones. That is not to say that family life should be completely abandoned, because after all, that's part of the structure of society, their families. But one should live in family life without being overly attached to the other family members. Rather, the main attachment should be to Krishna. If Krishna is in the center, then the relationships will revolve around devotional service, and there'll be healthy relationships. And in this way, the family members will help one another to advance in spiritual life. But if Krishna is, you know, if he's rejected or if he's just kept on the periphery somewhere, then one tends to expect too much from the relationships in family life. And as a result, he'll become overly attached, and this will lead to many kinds of hankerings and frustrations and sometimes elation, but then again sometimes depression, bitterness, resentment, anger, envy, lust. You could go on and on. So many kind of unpleasant things which come out of, you know, too much close attachment between persons in this material world. So that's why we have to cultivate attachment to Krishna. That may not be so natural for a person who is habituated to material sense gratification. It's natural for the soul, but the soul has been like covered over for so long by, you know, piles of dirt in this material world. He's been engaged for so long in bodily sense gratification in different species of life, and in this life also, that it's not just automatic for him to feel attachment to Krishna. That has to be revived. It's deep down inside, but it has to be revived. And therefore one has to follow a course of purification and rectification. Just like if someone suffering from a serious illness, you know, we may wish him to be healthy, he may wish to be healthy, but you have to follow the appropriate course of treatment and medication as prescribed by the doctors, and gradually he'll become healthy. So that may mean some restriction, say in his diet, some restriction in his activities. He just can't go, you know, out in the town and do whatever he likes. He has to stay home and has to follow the process. But if he does, then he becomes cured. So in the same way, devotee has to limit his activities, restrict himself from falling into gross material sense gratification. He has to give up illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling.
because these things are not good for him. They put him in the bodily concept of life, and they make him lose control of his mind and senses. And consequently, he falls into all kinds of unfortunate situations, which further bewilder him. He lunges for some material enjoyment, only to find it falls on his face, and gets himself all muddied and dirty, gets his consciousness all contaminated. So this is going on in the jail. So actually, a wise man, he has to rein in the senses. Just like a tortoise can pull his legs inside his shell.
It's amazing how swim.
They swim, isn't it? So, anyhow, the devotee like that, he can withdraw his senses from the objects of sense gratification. But, of course, still the senses have to have some positive engagement, something to do. So, there's certain sphere of activities in which the devotee can be active. And there's a sphere of Krishna conscious activity. So, like that, he can eat, but he can only eat prasad. As soon as he eats something else, then he starts to get some reaction of contamination in the consciousness. So, he can engage in sex life, but only under the conditions of grahastha ashram. Otherwise, then he will be subject to reaction. Subject to sinful reaction in himself. He can, of course, not take intoxication like alcohol and drugs, etc. But he can get intoxicated on the chanting of the holy name. Immediately, of course, this is what we're forbidden. For devotees, gambling also is completely forbidden for devotees. So certain activities he can do, certain activities he can't do. But there's so much to do in Krishna consciousness that there's no problem at all. It's just a question of getting one's focus right. So that may take little practice, discipline. So that's why Vaidhi Bhakti, in the beginning we follow rules and regulations. We perform bhakti according to rules and regulations. And that gradually shifts a person's focus of his consciousness away from material sense gratification and on Krishna. So then he becomes habituated to always doing Krishna conscious activities and always speaking in a Krishna conscious way. And gradually his mind becomes more and more attuned to thinking how to serve Krishna and how to understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And his intelligence is employed in that way also. So then the more the focus of his attention is on Krishna like that, the more he develops attraction for Krishna, and the more he feels reciprocation with Krishna, like that, there's gradual development of spontaneity in his service and love towards Krishna. So because he's so much absorbed then in Krishna, he doesn't become so affected by the external conditions of the material world. One who doesn't have that absorption in Krishna, all he knows is his external world. So he's always pinning his hopes on different persons or different situations within this world. And because the persons and the situations are always in flux, so then that person's consciousness is always being buffeted around by the waves of material nature. So sometimes he's feeling happiness, sometimes he's feeling distress, sometimes hankering, sometimes lamentation. He's too much dependent on external circumstances. But if he's got senses under control and absorbed in Krishna, then even though he's living in the midst of such external circumstances in the material world, he doesn't feel disturbed or affected by them, and he develops a kind of equipoised mentality, undisturbed mentality. Yeah? Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, Nasuchati Nakanchati, Samasarvishu Bhuteshu Man Bhakti Mlavate Param. That
One who is thus engaged in devotional service. One who is thus transcendentally situated and who is equally disposed to every living entity and doesn't hanker on the man. And thus he attains the spiritual path. Something like that. So he's satisfied. Hankering and lamentation is a symptom of material consciousness because the person is unsatisfied, so he's always wanting something else. Hankering, hankering, hankering. And if he doesn't get, then he's lamenting. Yeah? The poverty example, one will build up, I shouldn't have spent it this way, I shouldn't have spent it that way. So
hankering and lamentation, symptom of material consciousness. But that one who is advanced in spiritual life, his satisfaction is within. His satisfaction is in serving Krishna. So therefore he has nothing to hanker for in material life, and he doesn't lament. Of course, a devotee may regret if he has performed sinful activities in the past, and he's resolved not to again perform them. But he doesn't go on lamenting about it all the time. He gets, there's no time to waste in constant lamentation. Rather, the devotee, he goes on with the activity of devotional service and preaching Krishna consciousness. And he's equally disposed to all living entities. He sees them as all potential devotees, and he does his best to bring everyone to Krishna consciousness. Of course, he keeps the association of devotees, so in that sense, one could say he's more friendly with devotees or more partial to devotees. That's natural, after all, because he does depend on the association of devotees to keep him fixed in Krishna consciousness. That is important to note, that a devotee is dependent in that way. He depends on Krishna, and he depends on devotees' association, he depends on the holy name. But that's one of the symptoms of surrender, always to depend on Krishna, and always to feel that Krishna is one's protector. We do have to surrender, but we do have to surrender to Krishna and Krishna's devotees, and make sure that we don't surrender to Maya and Maya's representatives, because they will simply give us a hard time and spoil our whole life, and we'll also spoil their life. That's what's going on in the material. They're spoiling each other's lives, spoiling the valuable opportunity for spiritual advancement which is afforded by the human body. It's said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Vayur Harati Vai Pumsham Ujyanastan Chayanasu. Both by rising and setting, the sun diminishes the life of everyone, the lifespan of everyone, except those who engage in the service of the all good personality of God. So the materialists, they're spoiling their lives, and with every rising and setting of the sun, their life energy is being sapped away. But this is not the case of the devotee. With every rising and setting of the sun, he's becoming more inspired and more determined in Krishna consciousness, more realized, more aware of his spiritual position and his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in that way, devotees are not spoiling each other's lives, they're improving each other's lives. And as time goes by, they're becoming more fixed and more absorbed in Krishna. And as a result of that, they're becoming less dependent on material conditions. We see how some of the very advanced devotees, they're completely, detached. They're very austere, and they had no requirement for all kinds of social dealings and family dealings, and hardly even didn't even need to search for foodstuffs. Just like, say, Madhavendra Puri, for example, he never even begged for foodstuffs. Just whatever came that he would take. Or the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, they were just taking just very little foodstuffs, some buttermilk, very, very frugal. Sanatana Goswami was worshipping Madan Mohan, just offering the dried chapatis. You know the story, of course. Madan Mohan complained, why don't you bring me some salt? And he said, I'm too old, I can't go so far You have to be satisfied with Trichapadis. So that means that he would just respect that, you know, remnants, prasad. And Raghunath Das, he would just take like that very little buttermilk or butter, something like that. He said that their bodies were thin and shaking like leaves. So they're so much detached from the bodily platform. It's a very advanced platform of Krishna consciousness. You can't artificially jump to that platform. Once a devotee from Africa, he came to Mayapur and he was trying to imitate Haridas Thakur. Built a sort of a kutir out in the fields, and he was chanting, trying to chant 24 hours, hardly eat anything. And he didn't come to kirtan or class when Prabhupada was giving class. Or didn't come for prasadam. So Prabhupada, it's in one purport, he said that after a few days he went away and we've never seen him again. Not really advanced, just trying to make a show of it. So we can't imitate these great Babajis and renowned sadhus that we hear about in the Bhagavatam. But we should practice Krishna consciousness in the way which Srila Prabhupada has recommended, because fallen souls in Kali Yuga, especially in the Western countries, too much addicted to sinful activities. Therefore, there has to be some gradual change, gradual reformation. And therefore, living in the ashrams and or close to the temples of Krishna consciousness, coming, doing regulated devotional service, taking the prasad offered to the deities, this will gradually purify one's consciousness, and over a long period of time, he'll become more and more absorbed in Krishna. And thus he will come to the transcendental platform, and he'll not be too much affected by all the changing conditions of the world. The world, material world, is perpetually in flux, perpetually in change. You cannot control the material energy and just make some, you know, Vaikuntha situation by adjusting the material energy. That's not the way. But you can make the Vaikuntha situation by adjusting your consciousness, so that even while in the material world you are actually developing spiritual perception and devotion, pure devotion to Krishna. Savai pumsham paro dharmo yatho bhaktir huksa jaya ahoitaki apatiyataya atma superstivity. The highest occupation for humanity is that by which one can gain attraction for the devotional service of the Lord. So such service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the soul. So perpetually one has to be engaged, and he has to give up all personal motivation and become a completely pure devotee. Then he'll become fully satisfied. To the degree to which there's personal motivation, there's a certain impediment or cloudiness in one's relationship with Krishna. But the more he gives up motivation, then the more he comes close to Krishna and becomes fixed on the spiritual platform. So it's a question of time and perseverance and strict adherence to the process. If one does it, then he can be sure in due course of time that he will get the desired result of Krishna praying. But he has to practice to avoid offenses, to give up material attachments, and to develop his attachment to Krishna more and more and more. So any questions? For Iskand devotees, it's not so essential. Of course, the Goswamis were doing like that sometimes. If one spiritual master gives him permission, then he can do it. Depends on the person, you know. For us, you know, preaching is the most important. That's the thing that Prabhupada liked the most stress. Yeah.
That's why they have time with artificial meditation.
Well, that a person, he'd become easily agitated, angry, or that he'll, you know, lapse from his standard. He'll take, you know, a great vow and then lapse from it. Those are signs that he's not, you know, ready for that particular platform consciousness. our enunciation. Any, someone else like to say something about that? Also, your heart will become hard. You will treat others roughly. Yeah.
How are we not, in a sense, all artificially renounced?
I guess, there's, of course, every person is different. Some people, they easily give it up, no doubt, due to the previous pious activities. But, you know, I understand your point that there's a certain amount that one has to do something that he's not used to in order to become cured. But if one is a sincere person, then he should be able to take that within his stride. But, you know, what he's referring to is if one tries to, you know, push himself too much, say, hardly eating at all, hardly sleeping, chanting huge numbers of rounds, whatever, then, you know, that may be too much attempted renunciation, and then he may sort of spring back to a position of sense gratification from that. So one has to do with things in a balanced way, and that's what's recommended in Bhagavad Gita, that one should be regulated in his habits of eating, sleeping, and recreation. One shouldn't eat too much or sleep too much, or eat too little or sleep too little. So Prabhupada has given us a, you know, kind of a balanced program. We can see pretty much that that's more or less suitable for the devotees in ISKCON, for people living in different countries and from different backgrounds. But, you know, in this particular time of Kali Yuga, so the kind of program that Prabhupada's given is comfortable, a comfortable level of renunciation, you can say, an appropriate level of renunciation, so that it's not too extreme. But at the same time, Hare Krishna, it does allow, you know, people to be able to take the Krishna consciousness and give up sinful activities without sort of flipping out. Well, for some people, it's even too much for them. So then we have to, just like Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, if you can't follow regular principles of Bhakti Yoga, then try to work for me. And if you can't do that, there's other prescriptions. So we have to study the nature of each person, how much they're ready to, you know, perform some kind of austerity, what level of austerity they can perform. I would say the degree of austerity that a person can perform, it's related to one's advancement. What does it mean, renunciation?
Yeah, what's it like a
definition
of it?
Might look in the dictionary. Giving up that which is not conducive for spiritual progress. You can quote it.
That when one who gives up, one who renounces things without understanding who they belong to, is not as complete as an inner renunciation as one who renounces the propensity to be given in Krishna's
name. Where is that though? Is it from the Shemitah? Is it? What is it? Okay, so thank you very much. Gantrap Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Srila Prabhupada Ki
Through many, many lifetimes, it is changing and evolving in different ways. And so, in the previous lifetime, if someone has been very impious, and then he takes birth, he is likely to continue that kind of mentality. So to change him requires a lot more endeavor. Whereas if the husband and wife are in Krishna consciousness, if they are always engaged in devotional service and thinking of Krishna, then the child or the personality who is attracted to that womb will be a devotee, and he will be much easier to train. And in fact, as he grows up, if he's trained nicely, he'll bring joy to his parents because of his being a devotee. So that way, mother, father, and children, they'll remind one another of Krishna. Of course, to accomplish that, the association of other devotees is essential, especially in the present day and age, because it may be that in previous times or in India, the background was very strict, and all the members of the family very Krishna conscious, and also the society in general much more spiritually orientated. So just within that family unit itself, they could generate Krishna consciousness. But we can see anyway in India that the society is structured in such a way that generally that family like that, husband, wife, children, don't just live as an isolated unit like you find here in the West. Generally, the Western society, the families are very isolated from one another. They don't have very close relations. Everyone's living in his own house, and he keeps the door locked, and somebody comes, you know, they're looking through the peephole. What kind of personality is here? Is he an intruder, or is he a friend like that? So people are very nervous and paranoid, and they don't have very open relations with one another. Whereas in India, we can see the opposite, that they have large joint families, and the door is always open. You can walk into practically anybody's house, and they'll welcome you and speak nicely to you. So it's a completely different kind of situation. So that kind of situation is much more conducive for spiritual life. So similarly, in our Krishna consciousness movement, our Grihastha devotees, they require to come to the temple and associate with other devotees, so that they're not always isolated, because if too much isolated, they may become too much familiar with one another, and it becomes very difficult to maintain Krishna consciousness, maybe loss of respect. So that's why Prabhupada described how in India, the men, they would stay in one part of the house, the women in another part like that, and they would associate with their own persons of their own gender, their own sex, more than with the opposite sex. In this way, they were able to control their senses better and keep their mind fixed on spiritual life. So similarly in Krishna consciousness movement, husband and wife, they may be living together, but still a good part of their time they should associate with the other devotees, men with the men, women with the women, and keep engaged in enthusiastic service to Krishna. In this way, everyone can remain on the transcendental platform, because everyone is tasting the joy or the bliss of devotional service, the bliss of having plenty of kirtan and hearing the shastra together, the bliss of taking prasadam together amongst the devotees. So this is actually the blissful family, the larger family of devotees. And the devotee, he desires to have that kind of blissful family life at all costs. Whereas if we see a devotee who's isolating himself, and he's always surrounded by his family members, and he doesn't like to associate with the other devotees, then we can understand that actually he's not in the proper state of Krishna consciousness, but he's actually become overly attached to wife and children. And in such cases, generally, a person's devotional service, it dwindles. It can dwindle to the point of practically nil. Mm. Just like we were talking with one ex-devotee, well, I guess still devotee, when we were in Dunedin. He used to be a devotee in England. Mm. I knew him quite well. And he used to do so much service there. Mm. He was a very qualified devotee, and a very expert in many kinds of management work of our society. Mm. But nowadays he's got some little computer business there in Dunedin. And looking in his face, it looked very unhappy, suffering. But when, of course, just talking with the devotees, you know, and coming to the program, sometimes, as he would speak, his face would brighten up when he would remember his days in Krishna consciousness. Mm. So, unfortunate, of course, to see a devotee withdraw into that cocoon of family life. Mm. And, of course, there's no real shelter there. So the tendency is that the husband and wife, they'll take shelter of sense gratification. And in this way, they further complicate their life. And it's very miserable feeling for a devotee who has taken initiation and who has vowed to follow very high principles, that he should fall down into such a bewildered condition. Therefore, he must always be lamenting within his heart that I had such wonderful opportunity, such wonderful association, but now I've fallen down into this condition, very hard to get out. In fact, that boy, he said that actually it's even more difficult to join again, to come back again, than it is to join in the first place. Mm. So those devotees who are in Krishna consciousness, who are engaged in devotional service, they should be always praying to Krishna, just as Prabhupada himself said, I'm always praying to Krishna that I won't fall down. Because to fall down means not only we may fall into some bewildered condition in this life, but we may fall down into some lower species of life after leaving this body, and it could go on for hundreds and thousands of lifetimes. So it's very precarious. Therefore, a devotee by any means should cling on to the association of other devotees and be absorbed in devotional service. Sometimes, within the association of devotees, there may be some difference of opinion, and someone feels, oh, this is too difficult, this ISKCON, and let me withdraw myself a little bit. But this is actually dangerous, and it's also given to the false ego. Because sometimes in the association of devotees, someone may point out to us, if we're making some mistake or some kind of anartha is rising up within the heart and is being manifested in our behavior. Mm. So other devotees, they may chastise us, or they may speak strongly in some way, actually with a view to help us to overcome such anarthas. But someone who is false ego is a little bit too dominant, he may become offended, and he may think, who is this devotee to tell me? I don't want to listen to this anymore. I know what I'm doing. And in this way, the devotee, he may withdraw himself from the association of other devotees. This is most unfortunate. We have to not give so much credence to our mind and false ego, because the mind and false ego have the tendency always to talk nonsense. Mm? We're always going around, we're listening to this little voice inside, talking to us all the time, trying to convince us that we're very expert, we're very wonderful, we're very attractive personalities. Mm. But this, as Lord Krishna has said in Bhagavad Gita, that the mind can be the best of friends, but it can also be the greatest enemy. Mm. So if your enemy is talking to you, he'll always be trying to trick you in some way. So, like that, if the mind is unbridled, not properly disciplined and engaged in devotional service, it will come up with so many wrong ideas, devious ideas, which can drag us down from Krishna consciousness. So one should therefore not give credence to the mind, but he should be callous with the mind. As the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur advised, we should beat the mind. You see, just like you have some, I don't know, some animal like that, or dog. You may have to beat that animal to make him behave properly. So in the same way, a devotee should be quite determined and ruthless with the mind. Sometimes, we see sometimes devotees a little bit sentimental there, trying to train some bullocks, but they don't want to beat them a little bit or put a ring through their nose because that might hurt them, right? Isn't it? Sometimes you see. But actually, that's not the way to train bullocks. Bullocks have to be, you know, given some discipline, and there has to be ring through the nose, and they have to be controlled like that. So in the same way, we may not like to beat our mind or not give credence to our mind, but it's necessary in order to be fixed in Krishna consciousness, that the mind be brought under control, not be allowed to wander all over the place and just dwell in all kinds of sense gratification. The mind has to be forced to think of Krishna. So that's why we have to force ourselves to get up early in the morning, come to Mangal Arati, chant japa, come to class, because if we don't do it, then the mind tends to wander away, and before we know it, we lose our desire altogether. So we have to use the intelligence, as Prabhupada has explained in the Nectar of Devotion. Vaidhi Bhakti means to follow rules and regulations, and one may not be inclined to do that. One may not like to get up and come to Mangal Arati. Of course, if one lives in a temple building, it's much easier, because there's a lot of pressure there, isn't it? The conscious blowing you can hear, and devotees are getting up, jeev jago, like that. And there's a tremendous pressure to get to the program. But someone's living in their griha, and no temple commander is going to be coming there smashing the door like that. So he may think, yes, well, you know, I'm tired today. I worked very hard yesterday, and anyway, it's cold outside. It's quite a long way to the temple. I'll just sleep a little bit longer. So this is very dangerous, very dangerous. And we have to, especially in the Grihastha Ashram, one has to become even more strict and determined that he's going to rise early, he's going to come to the temple. So that means using intelligence. Of course, as if one goes on doing that for years and years, he actually does discipline his mind and senses, and thus he rises to a higher platform of Krishna consciousness, a much more spontaneous platform, where he genuinely desires to come and associate with the devotees, to dance in kirtan. In fact, he doesn't want to miss it for a moment. He just doesn't want to, for any reason, not be present in the temple, in the program. He doesn't want to be not engaged in devotional service. So the devotee who comes to that platform, that enthusiastic platform of spontaneous service to Krishna, he is most fortunate, because his mind then is trained always to dwell on Krishna. No matter what happens, any difficulty or sudden problem arises, the devotee's mind immediately goes to Krishna, takes shelter of Krishna, that let Krishna solve this difficulty, let's see how he solves this difficulty, let's see what kind of direction or indication Krishna gives. And such devotee also very keen to hear from other Vaishnavas, what is their advice, how he should engage in devotional service, or how he should execute his particular kind of service. He likes to consult with others and do things in a cooperative fashion. As Srila Prabhupada said, your love for me will be shown by how much you can cooperate together after my departure. So serious devotees in Krishna consciousness, they have this mood always, how to execute the desire of Lord Chaitanya and Prabhupada in a cooperative way so as to create a harmonious atmosphere within the society of devotees. So that harmonious atmosphere itself is very attractive to others, because the atmosphere within the society of non-devotees is very uncooperative, is very exploitive. People are very miserable, very frustrated. They're suffering incredibly. So if they come to Krishna consciousness and they see this very nice harmonious mood among devotees, then very attractive also to take up Krishna consciousness. But if they come to Krishna consciousness and they see that devotees are not cooperating very well, or devotees are criticizing one another a lot, and this will be very disturbing. They'll think, well, same thing out there, same thing in here. Of course, not the same thing, but the neophyte may not have the ability to judge that. He just sees some differences of opinion, arguing going on. So he thinks, I might as well, you know, go back to the material world. What's the difference? But if he sees very nice mood, Krishna conscious, cooperative, Krishna conscious family mood, then definitely he'll feel much more attracted and much more inspired to take shelter of Krishna, because to take shelter of Krishna means to take shelter of Krishna's devotees. And one will only like to take shelter of devotees if they can offer one something much better than one has got in the material world. So of course people in the material world, they're able to accumulate so many kinds of possessions, and they like to take shelter of their material arrangement. But that of course is all limited and temporary. So coming into the association of devotees, if one can find that higher mood, blissful mood, happy mood, then that is much more attractive than any material arrangement, no matter how prosperous a person may be. And also, if the devotees are working cooperatively, then they'll also be able to make the society prosperous, in that everyone will be provided for sufficiently within Krishna's temple. Because if devotees are cooperating, then they can be enthusiastic to do all the different activities, to distribute books, to preach, to collect Lakshmi, to run the temple nicely. Devotees become empowered if there is a good cooperative mood of Krishna consciousness, if there's enthusiastic kirtan together. So the basis, of course, is hearing and chanting together. And this is very important. In London, many years ago, there was some difference of opinion between the devotees and Prabhupada. Said they're not having enough kirtan together. They should perform more kirtan. I was even noticing also in New Varsan the very great change of mood over the last year. A lot better attendance in the programs. Morning program, evening program. Many devotees coming now. So naturally there's a boost in the cooperative mood and the enthusiasm of the devotees and the confidence in the project and in ISKCON and so forth. It's all increased because it's based on increased hearing and chanting together. So Prabhupada laid a great stress in our movement on temple life, on strict attendance in the morning program, because he knew that this is the only means to counteract the powerful influence of Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga, now it is infiltrated everywhere, in every aspect of people's lives, every aspect of their consciousness. So to drive out that influence of Kali Yuga requires a great strength, determination, and togetherness also. And Prabhupada gave the example of the bamboos. If you have one bamboo, you can break it very easily. But many bamboos together, you cannot break. So in that way, by close association, the devotees gather strength and determination, and then they become empowered to do so many wonderful activities on behalf of Krishna. So this is the peaceful family which we aspire to be part of, and that other kind of family life where one thinks that he can get shelter in the activities of wife, children, or husband, like that. That is simply illusion. Deyapatta kalatradishu atmasanyasvasattva pitesham pramatam nidhanam pasyan api nepasyati. Persons who are devoid of spiritual knowledge take shelter of the fallible soldiers like the body, mind, children, society, etc. Although sufficiently experienced, still they do not see their inevitable destruction. So the soldiers are supposed to give protection to the country. But if they cannot give protection, they are fallible. They can be easily defeated. So in the same way, one may think that his family or his society will give him protection from death. But factually, this is not so. They are also fallible. They all have to leave their bodies. So how can they protect us? So Maharaj Yudhisthira, he said, this is the most amazing thing, that everyone has seen that my father died, my grandfather died, my uncle died, so many persons have died. Yet people think, I will not die, and I can take shelter in my family and my society. But in Krishna consciousness movement, it is always being preached that we are going to have to die, we're going to have to leave this body. Devotees are repeating it again and again. Could be today, could be tomorrow, could be next week. We have to leave this body. So, you know, don't be an illusion. You've got to be prepared for leaving this body. That means you've got to be thinking of Krishna. So you more important than anything else is to do activities which remind us of Krishna. This is the most important thing. Always to remember Krishna and not to forget him under any circumstances. So, Hare Krishna. Any question or comment?
You were mentioning before that grihasthas, and grihasthas tend to isolate themselves. I've also heard one mentioned by Atmatapa, who was saying that in the beginning, all the grihasthas used to live together, and that way they were more Christian conscious. But it seems like there's not really much interest in it anymore. So they sort of tend to want to live.
Well, grihastha life means, you know, husband and wife, they'll have some separate place to live. It's not that they're all going to live in one room. You see, that's also not Vedic. So they have to have some separate place to live, but they should live close to the temple so that they can come as much as possible to the temple, and they should spend as much time as possible in performing devotional activities and, you know, try to minimize the amount of time, you know, just spent alone, husband and wife. Of course, some allowance is there like that. But even that time spent should be Krishna consciously spent. Otherwise, it's very dangerous.
Maharaj, you're making the point at the beginning of the lecture about the ideal Vedic situation, but in Krishna consciousness, sometimes we see that you know, the Matajis are asked to perform service which wouldn't normally be considered Vedic. They're also considered to act in a Vedic way. So sometimes it becomes a little hard for devotees to make that adjustment. So on the one hand, going out there and confronting the materialists and acting like the strong soldiers and coming home
Well, you know, a devotee by the grace of Krishna can become empowered, you know, to do everything, isn't it? And after all, that's one of the instructions Prabhupada gave to the Matajis who were going out and doing Sankirtan, isn't it? They should be like a lion in the chase and a lamb at home. So just like everything else, you know, you have to pray to Krishna to help you, you know, to carry out those orders, those desires of Prabhupada. And Krishna will help you. Just like, you know, Krishna helps the devotees to do so many amazing things, so that can also be accomplished by His grace.
The other question I had was, you were speaking about exploitation being rampant in society as well. So sometimes, we do see it actually in Krishna consciousness, especially a lot of emphasis seems to be placed on how the woman should act, and not always so much emphasis placed on how the men should act. And quite often you'll find that so much pressure is placed here, but there doesn't seem to be so much pressure placed on, you know, the other side of the coin. So sometimes you'll find that the woman will actually begin to feel a little exploited, because they're always being told, you should be like this, you should be like that, you should do this and you should do that. And because that's the Vedic system, then, you know, you accept it as being instruction from Krishna, but there's not always anybody around saying to the husband or saying to the men, you should be like this and you should be like that. And you know, sometimes you find that, you know, I get people coming to me and asking me this question, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to be humble in all circumstances, even when you can see that someone's overboard, or how do you act in a situation if you actually feel like you're being exploited?
Of course, it's it may occur. Yeah, that may be true. The duty of the man also is to remind one another, you know, to behave properly, to maintain a strict standard. And it's not that, you know, the women should just shut up and say absolutely nothing if they see there's something wrong or there's some misbehavior. They may also try to point that out in a Krishna conscious a way as possible. Sometimes within the society of devotees, we have to point out to some other devotee that maybe their behavior is not quite proper, so we may try to point that out in a way which doesn't appear to be aggressive or to be overreacting, but Krishna conscious. In other words, if a woman is, you know, if she's well situated in Krishna consciousness, and her husband or some of the conscious, that can be pointed out discreetly. Sometimes it may, you know, through someone else's wife, say the wife of a senior devotee, that can be brought to the notice of the husband, like that. So there are various avenues, you know, for dealing with such kind of situation. And again, if one is a serious devotee, then Krishna will give the intelligence. Krishna will give the intelligence how to deal with. Where there's a will, there's a way, and if someone is genuinely Krishna conscious, then Krishna will protect that devotee, and that devotee will see everything also as Krishna's mercy, and understand how to proceed.